Let's talk now about the model program. The model program for the ad service is fairly simple, model.cs. The state of the ad service at any point will be a map, and the map has a map is sort of a dictionary, and what it does is it maps integers, that's the job identifiers, to job info elements that have the actual info for a job. Initially it's empty, so in the initial state it'll be empty. And that's all there is to the state. The rest is helper methods. One of them is just a way to get the jobs in use internally, but this is using the map container. And then there's a capture method just to save some typing. Instead of saying requirement.capture every time I need to capture a requirement, I just say capture and provide an ID. We're using this prefix, msatService_r, as our prefix for all the requirements, and you'll see how this ends up being in an exploration. Well, this is basically the state. I'll talk about some of the other things in the state, and then there are rules. There's one rule per action, and there are only three actions that I want to test: add job, delete job, and get job info. Let's look at add job. Actually, I'm hiding part of it, the error management part. I'm leaving it for the end. But it first gets a new ID, so it calls this helper method allocate unique ID. We will take a brief look at it later. Then it computes the time based on some parameters that are defined here on top, like the server time density. It says 60,000 milliseconds. That's 1 minute or so, and so on. Then it uses the map, jobs was the name of the map in the state, to add the info and relate it to the job ID that it obtained in this first step. And then it captures a requirement. As I said, this is just a helper function. It's calling the library method provided by Spec Explorer called requirement.capture. And it has two parameters. One is the ID that will be used to be added to as a suffix to the ms at service.r to actually build a string ID. And then there's a string describing the requirement. This is just good practice. The string will not be used by Spec Explorer, but usually we try to write as this string here as if it were a comment in order to make sure that we are that the code around it matches the description. So in this case, it says when adding a job, the server must return a job identifier not associated with any previously added job. And if I'm reviewing this model, I can tell this is probably being tested because the job ID is computed by allocating a unique ID. So it's not repeating any existing value. Well, I'll talk about the job ID management in this model a little bit later. Then when we're deleting the job, there is a condition, of course, that the job must exist, and all we do is we remove it from the list. Besides, we deallocate the ID so it can be reused. It's not in use anymore. And finally, get job info again requires that the ID that is being passed in contains the key, is contained as a key in the job map, and then we return whatever was stored there, which is what requirement 2 required. When querying information about a job, the server must return the same information specified at job creation time. And that's what we're we're checking. Just a second. See how we have, we're returning the job info in an out parameter. We're computing the out parameter and returning true, which means it was correctly returned. Yes?
What if you want to test a condition where you're trying to delete the job that doesn't exist or trying to get information of it?
The question is, what if we wanted to test the condition, the case where an error is produced, basically, when one tries to update information, to obtain information that wasn't registered, or to delete a job that doesn't exist. And I'll talk about that later in this presentation. At least with one example, we can also extend it to those. Yes.
So I'm a little bit confused about, just look at the add job itself.
Okay.
It doesn't seem to do anything with the underlying adapter. It just seems to be manipulating state in the model.
So the question is, when looking at these rules, it looks like it's doing nothing with the adapter. It looks like it's just manipulating the model state. And the answer is yes, and that's a very important insight, because that's what every model does. So the model never invokes the adapter. The model can be explored completely without an adapter. Every action could be abstract, and I could still be exploring the model and even creating tests from the model. The adapter is only used at test time. Usually it doesn't even exist when one is creating the model. So what the rules here do, remember this thing here, and that's why we wanted to change this attribute. Before it was called action, now it's rule, to stress the fact that this is just a rule explaining Spec Explorer in which states this rule should occur and then produce a step, and what the state should be after this rule is applied in the model. From this model exploration, we will generate test cases, and those test cases will invoke the actual implementation. So in this case, I'm testing already something at this point in a test, not during exploration. So when I say I capture this requirement, it means if ever during a test you are able to correctly invoke add job, getting the expected result and the expected output parameter, then please consider that you have captured requirement number one, but only at testing, right? And what will happen is when we explore the model, we will see that some of the steps in the model are labeled with requirements, meaning if this step ends up being in a test case, then you will be testing something. But there is no connection between the model and the adapter, except the fact that they share action names at this point. The actual actions in the adapter, the methods that correspond to actions, will be only invoked when running the tests. So did you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Just to clarify then. So in the generated test, right, if the generated test is going to do an add job,
right,
after it does that, does it then invoke the model?
The
and
question
say,
is,
I've done that, now you might have a rule you need to run?
The question is, so when we generate tests and we, in a test, we invoke this method, the corresponding method to this rule in the adapter, will the model be invoked somehow? And the answer is no. The model will be only used during exploration. The model will produce action sequences, and those action sequences is all that the test suite will know about. Once I've generated the action sequences and generated tests from them, I could throw away the model, because the model was only used to determine which steps could be generated and what the parameters should be of those tests. That's why, going back here, the question is so important, the question as to why do we need rich data in the model if we will be actually throwing it away? And the reason is because we need to be able to predict what the implementation will do when we're modeling. Because our test cases will predict what the implementation should do, and that's where the oracle comes. That's why the test case can say this is the right data, right? And for that, we need the model to have complex data states so that we can correctly predict what the next step should be and the parameters, the value for the parameters in that step, right? I had two more questions, I think.
I have a question.
Yes.
Test oracle. So I saw yesterday another way to validate results. Here, the add job returns a Boolean value. And yesterday, I saw another way where an event was generated, like an add job event. Do you have a best practice of how to perform validation? Because Boolean, if it's true, it's all good. What if it's false? How do I?
So the question is, basically, how is the adapter, how is the oracle working here in a test case? And the answer is, there are when I invoke add job on the adapter, there are two things that I will be expecting. One is the return value, and the other one is an out parameter with a job ID. The same thing here, when I say get job, I'm not only waiting for a Boolean variable, but I'm expecting a completely more complex, let's say. In this case, it's not that complex, but it could be as complex as you want, a structure to be returned from, that's an out parameter, see? So it's a structure that will be returned from the implementation to the system under test. From the system under test to the test case, and the test case will compare whatever the model has predicted with this output. So it can be as complex as you want. The other part of the question was whether to use non-event actions like this one, a call return, or event actions to model things coming back from the implementation. And in a case where you have an adapter like this, it's basically your choice, because you are developing the adapter, so you might choose to use call returns or to later send events back. The main decision point here is related to synchronous versus asynchronous systems, which we discussed yesterday. So in a synchronous system such as this one, every stimulus that we send from a test case to the adapter or system under test immediately results in a response. And that's a nice pattern to model with call returns. If you cannot predict or if there's not such a fixed rule, then that's a case where you want to use events probably, and we'll show that later in the afternoon today in the second talk. Okay, yes, sure.
The test cases that are going to be generated, right? I'm guessing that they will have these maps. They will have this data structure in them to kind of track the objects, correct?
The question is, will the generated test case have this map that it represents the state of the model? And the answer is no, absolutely not. So again, from the model, and remember the state of the model can be very complex, we will generate steps. The steps are the ones that contain the oracle. So when we are running a test case, we will send a call to the system under test, wherever the model said we should send a call. We will pass in the arguments that the model tells us to pass in, and we will expect the return or event to come back with the results that the model predicted in its parameters, in this case, as the out parameter of these actions. But that's all. There is, if the model state, for example, would have 10 maps, we wouldn't know about them. The only thing that we're using here is we are matching, using this map internally in the model to map the ID to a job info, and then we're telling the test case that it should expect that info to come back. but the test case has no access to the model state. The model state is actually dropped when we're testing. It's not there. We'll see that when we generate test cases. Okay, so let's talk about the next step in the flow. After developing the model, the model program, I will do some slicing, and I'll show you why I need to do some slicing. I built this model program. Does it look like a finite model to you, a finite behavior to you? No, it's not, right? Why? Because I could, for example, there's no rule that stops me from adding as many jobs as I would want, right? And that by itself creates many states. So I'll go to my config cord file again, and I have, let me see the exploration. So I have a model program with bound parameters. Where is it? Okay, model program with bound parameters. That's what I will first explore. What I did here is what we saw yesterday, construct model program from config. What this does is it brings in all the rules contained in my project and tells Spec Explorer to explore them and construct a behavior from them. That's a construct model program. The problem there is that my model doesn't tell Spec Explorer what to pass as arguments to the parameters, to the add job, for example. The rest, if I do determine what I'm passing as an argument to add job, the rest of the methods have determined parameters, right? Because from what I've added, we know that nothing else can be deleted or queried than what I've already added. So only by providing parameters, parameter values for the add job, I can I limit what the model program will be doing. So that's what I did here using one of the ways in which this can be done. It's bind. Bind means every time in the behavior that comes after the in, every time you invoke this action, these are the parameters, the parameter values that you want to provide. And I'm providing a job info. I'm saying the first parameter has to be a job info where the command field can be either X or Y. This is a set. And the time can be either 340,000 minutes, 340,000 minutes, milliseconds, or 600,000 milliseconds, right? And then there's another parameter to the add job. It's an out parameter, and I'm using an underscore here saying I don't care what it is, right? This will be provided by the model. How will the model provide it? Because the model has this, what's it called, allocate unique ID to produce a unique ID every time this rule is invoked. So I'm ready to explore this machine. Go ahead and explore it. It's validating it.
Quick question for Nico.
Yes.
So in that machine there, you're saying when add job is called, this is how I want you to do it. All the other rules, I don't care. Do what you want.
The question is what I'm saying with the bind, sorry, or the...
Right.
Or you mean in the rule?
Bind, you said, this is how I want add
yes.
job to be called.
Yes.
And I don't care about the others.
What I'm saying here is, whenever the add job is the add job action is called, these are the arguments that I want provided. I could say comma here and provide other actions with other parameters with other parameter values if I need to. Yes.
But that means that Spec Explorer is free to use the other rules with any parameters it wants.
So this is telling Spec Explorer that it's free to use any values for the other for the parameters of the other actions, but it's not really free because it's constrained by the rules. because the behavior I'm providing here is a construct model program, which means use the rules. And the rules don't let Spec Explorer to use any values. It can just use values that come from the jobs that have been added before, right? In fact, initially, there will be no delete job because it needs the key set not to be empty. So initially, it won't have any delete job steps. The first delete job will come after the first add job, and it will be based on this the ID that was added to the job and so on. Yes. So just a second. Going back here, so I'm binding this single action. The rest of the actions, yes. Spec Explorer is free to provide arguments based on the model. Yes.
So what does the bind keyword do?
The purpose of a bind key is to tell Spec Explorer that every time the following action is invoked in the behavior that comes after the in keyword, these are the arguments that should be provided to it. So it basically limits if ever the model would call job info with different parameters, that would be excluded from this. That step would be excluded from this behavior. So what this says is it will be only called with the four parameters, where command can be X and time can be either 340 or 60 or 600, and then the other two combinations with command being Y. I had another question. Yes?
So what's different from when the bind, in this case, if we use a combination before we use it, to combine the two parameters?
The question is if there are other ways to provide arguments and how do they combine, and I'll talk about this a little bit later. Okay, so now I got an error because I added this exclude, and it happened so that I didn't have a reference to the system collections or generic in my code script. So I just removed the script, the excludes, because I don't need it here. And let's explore again. It's validating. The other way around would be to add the using so that I can use the type list string. Exploration job started. It's exploring. It went all the way up to 1024 states. And exploration now is ended. And it's rendering, and here's the result of exploration. The first thing we should notice is there's an orange box down here saying bounds. This means, this is actually very bad. It means that our exploration stopped not because our model was fully explored, but because some bounds were hit. In this case, a state bound. That's what the state in brackets here is telling me. And it predicts that if I ever zoom in this model, I will find some orange states. And if I hover over one of these states, it will say that a state bound was hit at that point. So in all these states, a state bound was hit. Right? But just from seeing an orange, remember that what I saw at the beginning, unless I would zoom in, wouldn't tell me that there are bounds hit. Fortunately, we have this box here telling me, no, this is not good. Something bad is happening here. Yes?
So if you have a model that's very large and you really do want to just, you know, stop at 289 or whatever,
right,
is it possible to go forward from here? Like, can you generate test cases and...
The question, actually the answer is very important to that question. The question is, well, what if this is a huge model, which it is, it's infinite actually, and we want to stop somehow the exploration because we don't want, of course, exploration to continue forever. We need to do something else in our lives or with our machine, for example, or even change our machines in a couple of years. So we don't want to keep it exploring forever. So we want to stop it. Actually, this is telling me that it has stopped as a state bound, at a state bound, and the state bound was created here. It says explore at most 1,024 states. That's what my config says. If I change the number here, let me go back to the exploration. As you can see, the number of explored states, this is the number of visible states because of step collapsing. I'm not seeing all the states, but there are 1,024 states, and 289 of them are bounds. So what's wrong with this? I wanted to stop at 124, and it did stop. Well, the problem is there are 289 bound states, which I haven't chosen. I haven't picked the states. So it's just stopping at some point because there were too many states. And if I would generate tests from this, the tests would get to this point where it's not true that we're done testing. This is not a full test. It just, well, exploration stopped arbitrarily there. So that's why this is very bad. And actually, I believe that Spark Explorer will not even let me generate test cases from this, because the test cases wouldn't make any sense, actually. Most test cases probably will stop at arbitrary points without having tested anything. So I need to find another way to construct a finite version of my infinite behavior, which I want to do in order to test from it. But it has to, I need to do it with some rationale, not just because I hit a bound, right? So that's the answer. How can I do that?
So,
yes, sorry.
So there's no way to just tell it. I only want you to do the test cases that you can finish and not the ones that you can't finish.
The question is, can I tell it to only do the test cases that you can finish from this bound hit model? The answer is yes, I think. We can try it out. There is a way to tell Spark Explorer exclude all paths that don't end in an accepting state. I'll talk about that a little later. But I still wouldn't recommend it, because the fact and the part of the value of model-based testing is you have your model, you see that your model is correct, or it's a correct slice of your model, what you really want to test, and then let the tool, in this case Spark Explorer, produce test cases that somehow give you some confidence that the implementation follows the model, which is some coverage. In our case, it's mostly step coverage. We call it also link coverage. So we're sure that all steps in my model were covered. In your scenario, where I stop at arbitrary bounds and say, exclude all these test cases that happen to end up in bounds and just generate test cases from the rest, the coverage will be completely meaningful. I'm covering some part of the model that I don't know about, right? So that's what we solve through slicing.